him here, why he simply hadn't killed him. What did it matter if his human body died? His consciousness still existed on the mothership. What was the point of this bizarre show and tell? In the corner was a wooden stand, and on the stand perched a large bird of prey, its head tilted forward, its eyes closed, apparently asleep. Evan's stomach fluttered. The years collapsed and he was a boy again, lying in his bed in that hazy space between dreaming and waking, watching the owl on the windowsill, watching him, bright round eyes shining in the dark, and his body feeling as if it had been frozen in amber, unable to move, unable to look away. Behind him, Vosh murmured, "Bubo virginianus, the great horned owl. Magnificent, isn't he? A fearsome predator, nocturnal, solitary. His prey rarely know he's coming until it's too late. He is your demon, your spirit animal in a sense. You were designed to be his human equivalent." The wings stirred, the thick chest heaved, the head lifted, the eyes came open, and their eyes met. "Of course, it isn't real," Vosh went on. "It is a delivery device, a machine. One came to your mother while you were still in her womb, bearing the program that was transmitted into your developing brain. Another visited you after that program booted up. Your awakening, I think it's called, to endow you with the 12th system." He could not turn away. The owl's eyes filled his vision, engulfed him. "There is no alien entity inside you," Vosh said. "None inside any of us, and none aboard the mothership. It is completely automated, like your old friend here, designed by its makers after centuries of careful study and deliberation, and sent to this planet to wean the human population to a sustainable level. And of course, to keep it there indefinitely, by changing human nature itself." Evan found his voice and said, "I don't believe you." The eyes. He could not look away. "A flawless, self-sustaining loop. An immaculate system in which trust and cooperation can never take root. Progress becomes impossible, for all strangers are potential enemies. The other, who must be hunted down until the last bullet is spent. You were never meant to be an agent of destruction, Evan. You were part of Earth's salvation. Or you were, until something in your programming went wrong. That is why I've brought you here. Not to torture you or kill you. I have brought you here to save you." He placed a consoling hand on Evan's shoulder, and his touch broke the hold of the owl's eyes. Evan whirled upon his captor. He would kill him. He would choke the life out of him with his bare hands. His fist punched empty air. The momentum nearly carried him off his feet. Vosh had vanished. Chapter 67. Though he remained upright, he had the sensation of falling from a great height. The room spun. The walls faded in and out of focus. Across the chamber, a figure stood in the doorway, a visual anchor that steadied him. He took a hesitant step forward and stopped. "What do you remember?" Vosh called from the threshold. "Was I standing right beside you? Did I place my hand upon your shoulder? What are our memories but the ultimate proof that we exist? What if I were to tell you that everything you remember since we stepped into this room, all of it, is a lie? A false memory transmitted into your brain by that owl behind you." "I know it's a lie," Evan answered. "I know who I am." He was shaking. He was colder than he'd been in the white room beneath the icy spray. "Oh, what you heard was the truth. It's the memory that's false," Vosh sighed. "You are a stubborn one, aren't you?"
"Why should I believe you?" Evan cried. "Who are you that I should believe?"
"Because I am one of the chosen. I have been entrusted with the greatest mission in human history, the salvation of our species. Like you, I've known since I was a boy what was coming. Unlike you, I knew the truth." Vosh's eyes strayed to the pod. His tone shifted from stern to wistful. "It's impossible to express how lonely I have been. Only a handful of us know the truth. In a blind world, only we had eyes to see. We were not given a choice.
You must understand, there was no choice. I am not responsible. I am a victim as much as they are, as much as you. His voice rose in fury. This is the cost. This is the price. And I have paid. I have done everything that was demanded of me. I have fulfilled my promise. And now my work is done.
He held out his hand.
Come with me. Allow me to grant you one last gift. Come with me, Evan Walker, and lay down your burden. Chapter 68.
He followed Vash. What choice did he have? Back down the long corridor to the green door. The technician rose when they entered and said,
I've run the test 3 times, Commander, and I still can't find any anomalies in the program. Do you want me to run it again?
Yes, Vash answered, but not now.
He turned to Evan. Please, sit. He nodded to the tech, who strapped Evan back into the reclining chair. The hydraulics whined. He rotated back, his face toward the featureless white ceiling. He heard the door open. The same woman who had examined him in the white room entered, wheeling before her a gleaming stainless steel cart. On it, laid out in a neat row, were 13 syringes filled with an amber-colored fluid.
You know what this is, Vash said.
Evan nodded. The 12th system.
The gift.
But why return it?
Because I'm an optimist. An incurable romantic.
Like you, Vash said, as if he had read Evan's mind.
I believe where there is life, there is hope.
He smiled.
But mostly because 5 young men are dead. Which means she may still be alive.
And if she lives, there's only one option left for her.
Ringer.
Vash nodded.
She is what I have made her, and she is coming to demand that I answer for what I've done.
He leaned over Evan's face, and his eyes burned with iridescent fire, and the blue flame seared him down to his bones.
You will be my answer.
He turned to the tech, who flinched under the intensity of his glare.
She may be right. Love may be the singularity, the inexplicable, ungovernable, ineffable mystery, impossible to predict or control, the virus that crashed a program designed by beings next to which we are no more evolved than a cockroach.
Then back to Evan.
So I will do my duty. I will burn down the village in order to save it.
He stepped back.
Download him again. Then erase it.
Erase it, sir?
Erase the human. Leave the rest.
The commander's voice filled the tiny room.
We cannot love what we do not remember.
Chapter 69. In the autumn woods, there was a tent. And in that tent, there was a girl who slept with a rifle in one hand and a teddy bear in the other. And while she slept, a hunter kept vigil over her, an unseen companion who retreated when she woke. He had come to end her life. She was there to save his. And the endless arguments with himself, the vanity of his own reason posing the unanswerable question, why must one live while the world itself perished? The more he reached for that answer, the farther the answer retreated from his grasp. He was a finisher who could not finish. His was the heart of a hunter who lacked the heart to kill. In her journal, she had written, I am humanity, and something in those 3 words splintered him in 2. She was the mayfly, here for a day, then gone. She was the last star, burning bright in a sea of limitless black.
Erase the human.
In a burst of blinding light, the star Cassiopeia exploded, and the world went black. Evan Walker had been undone.
Chapter 70. Cassie. Not 10 minutes into it, and I'm starting to think this whole Mission Impossible, killing Vash and rescuing Evan thingy was a very bad idea. Bob, the one-eyed pilot, shouts, 10 seconds! Ringer closes her eyes, and in an awful, sickening instant, I'm convinced we've been set up. This has been her plan all along. Leave Ben and the kids defenseless, then get the 2 of us killed kamikaze style at 5,000 feet because who gives a shit? There's a copy of her that lives in Wonderland. She'll just be downloaded into a new body once we're all dead. Now's your chance, Cass. Take out your knife and cut out her treacherous heart. If you can find it. If she has one. They're breaking formation, Bob announces. Ringer's eyes snap open. My chance slips away. Hold our course, Bob, she says evenly. The choppers bear down on us, spreading out so everybody gets a fair shot, so no one feels left out or cheated of the chance to blow us into a gazillion pieces. Bob holds our course but hedges our bets, locking a missile on the lead copter. His thumb hovers over the button. The thing that blows my mind about Bob is how quickly he switched sides. When he opened his eyes this morning, both of them, he was pretty certain which team he was batting for. Then, in the batting of an eye, ha, sorry, Bob. He's locked and loaded, ready to annihilate his fellow brothers and sisters in arms. So there you go. You can love the good in us and hate the bad, but the bad is in us too. Without it, we wouldn't be us. All I want to do in this moment is give Bob a big hug. They're going to ram us! Bob screams. We gotta dive! We gotta dive! No, Ringer says. Trust me, Bob. Bob laughs hysterically. We barrel toward the lead chopper as it barrels toward us, both at full throttle. Oh, sure! Why wouldn't I trust you? White-knuckled on the stick, thumb caressing the button, in a few seconds, it won't matter what Ringer tells him. He's going to fire. Ultimately, Bob is on nobody's side but Bob's. Break, Ringer whispers at the big black fist rocketing toward our face. Break now. Too late. Bob jams the button, the Black Hawk shudders like some gigantic foot kicked it, and a Hellfire missile explodes from its mount. The cockpit lights up like the noonday sun. Somebody screams. I think it might be me. A maelstrom of fire engulfs us for half a second, debris popping and smacking against our hull, and then we burst through the fireball to the other side. Holy Mother of God! Bob yells. Ringer doesn't say anything at first. She's looking at his scope and the five remaining white dots. Four break off, two right and two left, and the third continues on, edging toward the bottom of the screen. Oh no, where is he going? Hail them, Ringer tells Bob. Tell them we're surrendering. We are? Bob and I say at the same time. Then hold course. They're not going to force us down or fire on us. How do you know? Bob asks. Because if they were, they would have done it by now. What about the other one? I demand. It's gone. It's not following us. Ringer gives me a look. Where do you think it's going? Then she turns away. It'll be all right, Sullivan. Zombie will know what to do. Like I said, a very bad idea. Chapter 71. I sink back into my seat and fight to get air into my lungs. I think I forgot to breathe back there. My mouth is bone dry. I sip some water, but just enough to wet my mouth because I'm a little concerned about having to pee during the operation. Ringer's described the base to me in some detail, including the location of the Wonderland room, but I never asked where the bathrooms were. Ringer's voice crackles annoyingly in my ear. Get some rest, Sullivan. We're in the air for another couple of hours. And sunrise won't be far behind. We're cutting this too close. I'm no expert on covert ops, but I'm guessing they're a wee bit easier in the dark. Plus, if Evan was right, today is Green Day, the day the fireballs of hell rain from the sky. I hunt around in my pockets until I locate one of Ben Parrish's magical power bars. The alternative is bursting into tears. I'm determined not to cry until I see Sam again. He's the only thing left that's worthy of my tears. And what the hell did she mean, Zombie will know what to do? That's good, Sullivan. He'd better know, because you sure as hell don't. If you knew what to do, you wouldn't be on this damn chopper. You'd be with your little brother. Wise up. You know the real reason you're here. You can tell yourself it's for Sam, but you're not fooling anybody. Oh, God, I'm a horrible person. I'm worse than One-Eyed Bob. I abandoned my blood for a guy. And that's so wrong, it makes every other wrong thing I've ever done seem right. Ben told me Evan was lying or crazy or both, because who destroys their entire civilization for a girl? Oh, I don't know, Ben. Maybe the same kind of person who would sacrifice her only flesh and blood to repay a debt she didn't owe. I mean, it isn't as if I asked him to save me all those times, any more than I asked him to shoot me in the leg. I never asked him for anything. He just gave. Gave past the point where giving is sane. Is that what love is? And is that why it makes no sense to me? Because I've never felt it. Not for him, not for Ben Parrish, not for anyone. No, 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 please, brain, don't. Don't serve up Vermont and that damned dog again. I promise I'll stop thinking so much. Thinking too much has been my problem for a very long time. I've overthought everything, from why the others came, to what Evan was, to the very weird fact that I lived while practically all of humanity died, down to why that girl in front of me has the silkiest, most beautiful hair I've ever seen and why I don't, and why she has perfect porcelain skin, which I don't. And the nose. Good Christ, how stupid. What a waste of time. It's just genes with a little alien technology thrown in. Big whoop. I finish the bar and crumple the wrapper in my fist. It just doesn't feel right to throw it down on the floor. I lean back against the bulkhead and close my eyes. This would be an excellent time to pray, if I could think of a prayer. But my mind, so stuffed that my thoughts have to line up like crowds at Disney, can't think of anything to say to God. Not sure I want to talk to him anyway, the enigmatic bastard. Like he's crossed his arms and turned his back. And I wonder if this is how Noah felt on the boat. Okay, really appreciative about me, Lord, but what about them? And God says, oh, don't ask so many questions, Noah. Look, I made you a rainbow. The only thing that bobs up is Sammy's bedtime prayer. So, a little desperate, I go with it. Now I lay me down to sleep. Well, not really. When in the morning light I wake, well, probably won't happen either. Teach me the path of love to take. Yes. Okay, that's good. Please, God, this one thing, and don't fall down on the job. Teach me.
Chapter 72, Zombie. Keeping watch at the cave's entrance, admiring the night sky, except that one small green spot hovering above the horizon, when one of the stars breaks off from the field and descends toward us. Fast, very fast. Nugget touches my sleeve and says, look, zombie, a falling star. I push off the old rickety handrail I've been leaning against. That's no star, kid. Is it a bomb? His eyes are wide with fear. For one gut-rolling second, I think it could be. They've stepped up the schedule for some reason, and the obliteration of the cities has begun. Come on, back downstairs, double time. I don't have to tell him twice. He's already yards ahead of me when I hit the first chamber. I scoop Megan from the floor. She drops the teddy bear. Nugget picks it up. I carry her deeper into the caves, balancing her on the hip of my good leg. But each step sends a jolt of pain that makes the top of my head feel as if it's going to come off. There's a ledge down here, a 3-foot-high, 5-foot-deep gash in the rock cut out by an ancient river. I lift Megan into it and she crawls toward the back until the shadows engulf her. Shit, nearly forgot. I motion for her to come back. I pull one of the dead recruit's trackers from my pocket. Ringer's idea and a damn good one. Put this in your mouth, I tell Megan. She's thunderstruck. The look in her eyes, like I asked her to chop off her head. I've broached a touchy subject. Look, Nugget'll do it. I press the tracker into his empty hand. Right here, Private, I say, pulling back my lip and pointing to a spot between my cheek and gums. Then I turn back to Megan. See? But Megan has faded back into the shadows. Damn it. I give Nugget another tracker. Make sure she does it, okay? She listens to you. Oh, no, zombie, Nugget says very seriously. Megan doesn't listen to anybody. He shoves Bear into the space and calls softly to her.
Megan, take Bear. He'll keep you safe, like gravity.
After that piece of logic only a child could understand, he hitches up his pants, balls his fists, thrusts out his little chin, and says, "They're coming, aren't they?" We both hear it then, like the answer to his question. The sound of a chopper's engines, doubling in volume with each of our rapid breaths. Toward the entrance, the brilliant white of its searchlight slices through the dark.
Go, Nugget, get up there with Megan.
But I'm fighting with you, zombie.
He sure is, and at the worst possible time. Over his shoulder, I can see lamplight flickering in the weapons chamber.
Double damn it.
Here's what you can do. Kill that light down there, then meet me back here. If we're lucky, they won't even land.
Lucky?
I get the feeling he wants them to land.
Don't forget, Nugget, we're all on the same side.
He frowns.
How can we be on the same side if they want to kill us, zombie?
Because they don't know we're on the same side.
Go, shut off that damn light, go!
He scampers up the path. The chopper's light fades, but not so much its engines. Must be executing a sweep. We should be far enough underground to foil the IR, but there's no guarantees. The lamp goes out, and the caves plunge into darkness. I can't see an inch in front of my nose. After a few seconds, someone small bumps into me. I'm fairly confident it's him. Only fairly, though, because I whisper,
"Nugget, it's okay, zombie,"
he informs me, all business.
I grabbed a gun.
Chapter 73. There's something I'm forgetting. What is it?
Here, zombie, you forgot these.
He pushes a gas mask into my chest.
God bless Nugget. And God bless silencers like Grace and Father Death, who knew how to stockpile for the end of the world.
Nugget's practiced. He's already got his strapped on.
You've got Megan's?
Dumb. Of course you'd grab one for her.
Okay, pal, up you go.
Zombie, listen.
That's a direct order, Private.
No, zombie, listen.
I listen. Nothing except my own breath hissing and huffing in the mask.
They left,
Nugget says.
Shh. Ting, ting, ting.
The sound of metal striking stone.
Damn you, Ringer. Being right all the time is incredibly annoying.
They've tossed in the gas. Chapter 74.
Assuming you don't draw them off, how will they come?
I asked Ringer while we were barricading the back entrance.
You never paid attention in class. Do we always have to make it about me?
Trying to tease a smile from her has segued from a hobby to a borderline obsession.
Gas first.
You think?
I'd go with a few sticks of C4 to seal off the exits, then finish us off with a couple of bunker busters.
That's probably second. Behind us, toward the main entrance, the tear gas detonates with four loud pops. I grab Nugget around the waist and heave him into the cleft with Megan.
Get that mask on her now, I shout.
Then I'm hobbling up the path, thinking,
thank God he remembered. That kid deserves a promotion.
One thing's for certain, Ringer said. They won't be settling in for a siege. If they attempt a dynamic CQC, they'll probably hit the main entrance, which will give you a slight advantage. It's narrow like a cow chute. They'll funnel right to you. I'm running blind. Well, calling it running would be generous. I've got massive amounts of painkiller in me, at least, so the leg's not giving me much trouble. Adrenaline helps, too. Check the bolt catch on the rifle. Check the straps on the mask. An absolute dark. An absolute uncertainty. If they bust through the back entrance in a kind of pincer maneuver, we're screwed. If they hit with overwhelming force up front, we're screwed. If I freeze up or screw up at the critical moment, we're screwed. Freeze up like in Dayton. Screw up like in Urbana. I keep circling back to the same spot, and that spot is where I lost my baby sister, where I should have fought but ran instead. The chain that broke from her neck, lost now, still binds me. Oompa, Dumbo, Pound Cake, even Teacup, her too. She'd still be alive if I'd done my job. Now the chain, dropping like a noose around Nugget and Megan, and now the noose tightens. The circle comes round.
Not this time, Parrish, you zombie son of a bitch. This time you break the chain. You cut the noose. You save those kids.
No matter what. I will kill them as they funnel down the chute. I'll kill them all. Doesn't matter that they're no different from me. Doesn't matter they're trapped in the same goddamn game, bound like me to play a part they did not choose. I will kill them one by one. Absolute dark. Absolute certainty. The explosion knocks me off my feet. I fly backward. My head crashes against stone. The universe spins like a top. The air boils with the sound of rock smashing against rock as the entrance collapses. The mask got knocked sideways when I hit, and I take a huge breath of noxious gas. A knife plunges into my lungs. Fire fills my mouth. I roll to my side, gagging and coughing. I lost the rifle in my fall. I sweep the area around me. Can't find it. Never mind. Doesn't matter. Know what matters. Hauling myself to my feet, yanking the mask back into place, and tasting pulverized rock on my tongue, limping back the way I came, one hand searching the darkness, the other gripping my sidearm, knowing what's coming next because I called it and Ringer knew I called it. That's probably second. And I'm screaming through the mask. Don't move, Nugget! Don't move! But I don't think anybody can hear my voice but me. The second explosion hits at the back entrance, and I stay on my feet, though the floor ripples and stalactites break loose and smash down, a big one missing my head by a couple of inches. I can hear Nugget faintly calling my name. I lock in on the sound and follow it back to the crevice. I pull him out. They've sealed us in, I gasp. My throat burns. I've swallowed fire. Where's Megan? She's okay. I can feel him shaking. She's got Bear. I call to her. A tiny voice muffled by a gas mask comes back. Nugget's clutching my jacket with both hands like the dark might snatch me away if he lets go. We shouldn't have stayed here, Nugget cries. Out of the mouths of babes, but there was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. We rolled the dice that Bob's chopper would draw them off, and we lost. The bomber's gotta be on its way with a payload that will turn this 250,000-year-old cave into a swimming pool 2 miles long and 100 feet deep. We've got minutes. I take Nugget by the shoulders, squeeze hard. Two things, Private, I tell him. We need light and we need explosives. But Ringer took all the bombs with her. So we'll make another one real quick. We shuffle toward the weapons chamber, Nugget leading the way, my hand still on his shoulders. I steady him, he steadies me. The chain that binds us, the chain that sets us free. Chapter 75. Something I'm forgetting. What is it? Nugget bends low over his task. The chamber's choked with smoke and dust. It's like trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle in heavy fog, not unlike this whole freaking invasion. The familiar, blasted into a million pieces, an impossible jumble where no piece seems to fit with another. The enemy is within us. The enemy is not. They're down here, they're up there. They're nowhere. They want the Earth. They want us to have it. They came to wipe us out. They came to save us. And the shattered truth forever receding from your grasp. The only certainty is uncertainty. And Vosh reminded me of the one truth worth hanging on to. You're going to die. You're going to die. And there's nothing you or I or anyone else can do to stop it. That was true before they came, and it's still true. The only certainty is uncertainty. Except your own death. That's damn certain. His fingers are shaking. His breath is loud and fast inside the mask. One wrong move, and he blows us both up. My life is now in the hands of a kindergartner. Screwing on the blasting cap, attaching the fuse. Sullivan might be upset he's forgotten his ABCs, but at least the little SOB knows how to make a bomb. Got it? I ask. Got it! He holds up the device triumphantly. I take it from him. Oh, Jesus, I hope so. Something I'm forgetting. Something important. What could it be? Chapter 76. Now on to the next impossible dilemma. Bust through the back door or the front? One bomb, one chance. I leave Nugget with Megan and check the rear entrance first. A wall of rock, maybe 6 feet thick, if I'm remembering my landmarks right. Then returning the length of the cave to the front entrance. Moving too damn slow. taking too damn long. Finally there, I find exactly what I expected to find. Another rock wall, who knows how thick, and no way of telling if this is the better way out. Ah, screw it. I jam the PVC pipe into the deepest, highest crack I can reach. The fuse seems too short. I might not have time to reach a safe distance. The certainty of uncertainty. I light the fuse and book back up the path, dragging my bad leg behind me like a reluctant kid on the first day of school. The bang of the explosion seems muted, a pitiful echo of the two that trapped us down here. 10 minutes later, I've got Nugget by one hand and Megan by the other. It wasn't easy for Nugget to talk her out. She felt safe in that cozy little niche, and the chain of command wasn't worth a hill of beans to her. The person in charge of Megan is Megan. The hole at the top of the fall isn't very big and doesn't look very stable, but fresh air whistles through it and I can see a pinprick of light. Nugget says, "Maybe we should just stay here, zombie." He's probably thinking the same thing. Seal the entry points, station sharpshooters at both ends, and then it's just a waiting game. Nobody makes bunker-busting bombs anymore. Why waste precious munitions needed for the real war on a couple little kids and a gimpy recruit? They'll come out. They have to come out. The risk of staying is unacceptable. Don't have a choice, Nugget. Also no choice in who goes first. I grab his sleeve and pull him away from Megan. I don't want her to hear this. "You wait for my signal, understand?" He nods. "What do you do if I don't come back?" He shakes his head. The light's too weak and the lenses on the mask are too clouded for me to see his eyes. But his voice quivers in pre-cry mode.
"But you are coming back."
"If I've got a heartbeat, you bet your ass I'm coming back. But in case I don't." Up comes the chin, out goes the chest. "I'll shoot 'em all in the head." I heave myself into the hole. My back smacks against the top, the sides squeeze against my shoulders. It's gonna be a tight fit. Halfway through, I decide to take off the mask. I can't take the feeling of being slowly smothered anymore. Fresh, cold air bathes my face. Christ, it feels good. The opening to the outside isn't big enough for one of Cat Lady's dinners to wiggle through. I punch out the loose rocks with my bare hands. A smidgen of night sky, a swath of grass, and the one-lane access road slicing them down the middle. No sound but the wind. Let's go. I crawl into the open. I reach for the rifle slung over my shoulder, only there is no rifle slung over my shoulder. I forgot to pick it up on my way back to the entrance. So that's what I was forgetting. That was it, my rifle, right? Squatting beside the hole, holding my sidearm between my legs, listening, looking. Don't rush this, be sure. Escaping the trap is fine and wonderful, but where to now? Dawn isn't far off, and then the mothership begins her appointed rounds. I can see her, balanced on the horizon, green like a traffic light signaling go. I stand. A challenging maneuver given my legs stiffened up and putting my weight on it hurts like hell. Here I am, boys. Take your best shot. Nothing to see but the road and grass and the sky. Nothing to hear but the wind. I whistle into the hole for Nugget. Two short toots, one long. After 100 years, his round little head pokes out, then his shoulders. I pull him the rest of the way. He rips off the gas mask and inhales the fresh air, then yanks the gun from the back of his pants. He swivels left to right, knees slightly bent, gun thrust forward, like countless boys before him with plastic guns and water pistols. I whistle again for Megan. No answer. So I call down.
"Megan, let's go, girl!"
Beside me, Nugget sighs deeply.
She's so annoying.
And he sounds so much like his sister that I actually laugh. He gives me a curious look, head tilted to one side.
"Hey, zombie, there's a red dot on the side of your head."
Chapter 77. Dumbo didn't think twice in Urbana. I don't now. I dive into Nugget's chest, hurling him to the ground. The round slams into the rockfall behind us. A second later, I hear the report of the sharpshooter's rifle. The shot came from the right, in the direction of the copse of trees by the main road. Nugget starts to get up.
I grab his ankle and yank him back down. Low crawl, I whisper in his ear, like they taught us in camp, remember? He starts to rotate a 180, back toward the hole and the false security of the cave with its provisions and weapons. I don't blame him. It's my first instinct, too. Going back, though, only puts off the inevitable. If smoking us out and picking us off fails, they'll just call in the bunker busters. Follow me, Nugget. I scuttle toward the welcome center. The roof is a perfect vantage point for a sharpshooter, but our best option is to head away from the shooter we know about. Megan, he gasps. What about Megan? What about Megan? She won't come out, I whisper. Please don't come out, kid. She'll wait. Wait for what? For history to repeat itself, for the circle to come round. Only one place I can think of that's reasonably safe. I'm not happy about it, and I know he sure as hell won't be. But this kid is anything but soft. He'll deal. Past the building, then straight on about 20 yards, I tell him as we scoot along on our bellies. Big hole, full of bodies.
Bodies?
I imagine a red dot shimmering between my shoulder blades or on the back of Nugget's head. I've got eyes on him now, and if I see that red dot, I'm going Dumbo on it again. The ground rises slightly as we near the pit, and then we can smell it, and the stench makes Nugget retch. I lock down on his arm and tug him to the edge. He doesn't want to look, but he looks.
It's just dead people, I choke out. Come on, I'll lower you down.
He pulls against my grip.
I won't be able to get back out.
It's safe, Nugget. Perfectly safe. Unfortunate choice of words. They'd have taken the shot by now if they knew where we were. He nods. Makes sense to him.
But Megan,
I'm going back for her. He looks at me as if I've lost my mind. I take his wrists and lower him feet first into the hole. You hear anything? You play dead, I remind Nugget.
I'm gonna be sick.
Breathe through your mouth. His lips part. I see the tiny pellet glistening inside his mouth. I give him a thumbs up. He raises his right hand very slowly and puts it against his forehead in salute. Chapter 78. Crawling away from the death pit, I know what's going to happen. I know I'm going to die. My time's been borrowed, and you can't cheat death forever. Sooner or later, you have to pay up, with interest. Only please don't let Nugget and Megan be the price for my abandoning my sister. So I say to God, you took Dumbo for the debt, pound cake, and teacup. That's enough. Let that be enough. Take me, but let them live. The ground explodes in front of me. Clods of dirt and stone fly into my face. Well, shit, crawling's pointless now. I heave myself up, but the bad leg buckles, and down I go. The next shot rips into my sleeve, nicking my biceps before exiting the opposite side. I hardly feel it. Instinctively, I curl into a ball and wait for the finishing round. I know what's happening. These are soldiers of the fifth wave. Their hearts have been filled with hate, their minds conditioned for cruelty. They're playing with me.
Gonna make it last, you infested son of a bitch! Gonna make it fun!
And my sister's face before me, then bows and cakes and cups, then more faces than I can count, faces I recognize and faces I don't. There's Nugget and Megan, Cassie and Ringer. There's the recruits in camp and the bodies in the processing hangar laid end to end. Hundreds of faces, thousands, tens of thousands. Living and dead, but mostly dead. In the pit behind me, one living face among hundreds that aren't. And Vosh's rule applies to him too. Hand raised in salute, mouth open, and the tiny pellet that glistens inside.
Holy shit, Parrish. The tracker. That's what you forgot.
I jam my hand into the pocket, pull out the pellet, and stuff it into my mouth. In the cluster of trees across the road, on the rooftop of the Welcome Center, and from wherever the hell else they might be, the shooters hold their fire when the green inferno that surrounds my head winks out. Chapter 79. Call me zombie. Everything hurts, even blinking hurts, but I'm getting up. That's what zombies do. We rise. Maybe the shooters don't notice at first. Maybe they've turned their attention elsewhere, looking for green targets. Whatever the reason, when I get up, nobody takes me down. No hobbling this time, no dragging my wounded leg, no shuffling in the dirt like a damn zombie. I run full out through the pain, calling Megan's name now, fingers clawing in the dark until they wrap around her wrist. Then I've got her outside, her arm around my neck, her breath in my ear. I know the circle's complete. I know the bills come due. Just let me save her first, dear Christ. Suffer her not to die. I don't see it coming. Megan does. The teddy bear falls to the ground. Her mouth flies open in a silent scream. Something smashes into the base of my skull. The world goes white, and there's nothing. Nothing at all.
Chapter 80. Cassie. You can see it from miles away. The airbase is an island of blazing light in a dark, horizonless sea. A white-hot ember of civilization glowing in the middle of a wasteland of black. Though civilization is too nice a word for what it is. After all we dreamed and all those dreams we made real, all that's left of us are these bases, the lighted fools to guide humanity's way to dusty death. Macbeth was never my favorite, but there you go. The chopper banks to the left, bringing us toward the base from the east. We pass over a river, black water reflecting the conflagration of stars above it. Then the treeless buffer zone surrounding the camp that's laced with trenches and razor wire and booby-trapped with landmines, protection against an enemy who will never come, who isn't even here and maybe not even there, in the mothership that swings into view when we turn for the final approach. I look at it. It looks back at me. What are you? What are you? The others, my father called you, but aren't we also that to you? Other than us, therefore not worthy of us, not worthy of life. What are you? The shepherd culls the herd. The homemaker buys the bug spray. The blood of the lamb on its knees, the herky-jerky of the cockroach on its back. Neither has an inkling of the knife or the poison. The shepherd and the homemaker will lose no sleep. There's nothing immoral about it. It's murder without crime, killing without sin. That's what they've done. That's the lesson they've brought home. We've been reminded who we are, not much, and what we were. Too many. Roaches can scurry, sheep can run, it's no matter. We'll never get too big for our britches again, they'll see to that. I'm looking at an object in our sky that will be there until our sky is gone. Our escorts peel off as we shoot straight toward the landing zone. They'll stay in the air to monitor the situation after we land. There's a swarm of activity beneath us. Trucks and armored Humvees racing toward the strip, troops swarming like ants from a kicked-over mound. Sirens blare, searchlights stab into the sky, anti-aircraft guns swing into position. This should be fun. Ringer pats Bob on the shoulder. Good job, Bob.
Fuck you!
Oh, Bob. Gonna miss you. Gonna miss you so bad. Ringer climbs back into the hold with me, grabs the bag of Sammy bombs, and plops into the seat across the aisle. Her dark eyes shine. She's the bullet in the chamber, the powder in the hole. You can't blame her. Evan pointed it out a long time ago. For any of this shit to mean anything, you gotta live long enough for your death to matter. Not necessarily make a difference. Neither her death nor mine will. Just to matter. Suddenly I need to pee.
VQP, Sullivan!
She shouts. We've taken off our headsets. I nod, give her the thumbs up.
VQP, you bet.
Our descent begins. The hold is lit up by searchlights. Motes of dust sparkle and spin around her head. Saint Ringer, the raven-haired angel of death. Outside the blue circle upon which Bob puts us down, a ring of soldiers inside a barricade of armored vehicles, surrounded by watchtowers manned by snipers, beneath four attack helicopters patrolling overhead. We are so doomed. Chapter 81. Ringer leans back in the seat and closes her eyes like she's going to grab a quick power nap before the big final exam. Bag in one hand, detonator in the other. I've got a rifle, a handgun, a very large knife, a couple of grenades, a half full, think positive, bottle of water, two high energy bars, and a full bladder. Bob throttles the chopper down, and now you can really hear those sirens blasting. Ringer's eyes pop open and she stares at me like she's memorizing my face. I decide that so I don't obsess about my crooked nose. Then she says so softly I can barely hear her, "See you at the checkpoint, Sullivan." One-eyed Bob throws off his harness. He whips around and screams in Ringer's face. "He wanted you to come back, you stupid bitch! Why do you think you're still alive?" Then he flies out of the cockpit, his legs pumping cartoon fast before his feet even touch the ground, waving his hands over his head and screaming loud enough to be heard over the sirens. "Pull back! Pull back! She's gonna blow! She's gonna blow!" Ringer goes right, and I go left toward a terraced garden of fatigues identical to the ones I'm wearing, rifles pointed at my head, the front row kneeling, back row standing, and then Ringer hits the detonator and the chopper hops 5 feet in the air with an emphatic whoomp. The concussion shoves me right into the line of soldiers, the heat from the blast singeing their faces and burning away the hairs on the back of my neck. I bowl into the pack while the pack reverts to its instincts, just like Ringer said it would, everybody flattening on the tarmac and covering their heads with their hands. "You'll want to run, but you gotta hold," Ringer told me back at the cave. "Once the chopper blows, they'll lose you, so you have to wait for me." So here I am, just another recruit lying on her belly like the 100 others around her, hands over her head, her cheek pressed against the freezing concrete. Dress just like him, look just like him, act just like him. It's Vosh's own game turned against him. People are screaming orders, but nobody can hear them over the sirens. I wait until somebody taps me on the shoulder, but I'm no higher than hands and knees when Ringer sets off the IED somewhere in the vicinity of the hangar 50 yards away. That sets off full panic mode. Any semblance of order breaks down as troops run for the nearest cover. I take off toward the control tower and the cluster of white buildings beyond it. A hand grabs my shoulder, whips me around, and then I'm face to face with some random teenager who, as bad luck would have it, I'm going to kill. "Who the fuck are you?" he screams in my face. His body stiffens, welcoming the bullet. Not my bullet. I don't even have the gun out of the holster. The kill belongs to Ringer, Vosh's inhuman human firing from half a football field away. The kid's dead before he hits the ground. I take off again. I turn back once at the base of the control tower. Searchlights crisscrossing the field, the chopper burning, squads running willy-nilly, Humvees screeching in every direction. Chaos is what Ringer promised, and chaos is what we got. I sling the rifle into my hands and sprint toward the white buildings, heading for the command center located in the middle of the complex. There I'll find, I hope, the key that will open the lock that bars the door that leads to the room that will keep my baby brother safe. As I fall in behind a cluster of recruits crowding the door into the first building, Ringer sets off the second bomb. Somebody yells, "Jesus Christ!" and the logjam breaks. We all tumble inside like clowns bursting from the car at the circus. There's a part of me that hopes I find him first. Not Evan, Ringer's creator. I've invested a lot of time imagining what I'd do to him, how I'd pay him back for the blood of the 7 billion. Most of it's too gross to talk about. I'm moving through the lobby of the main administration building. Huge banners hang from the ceiling, "We are humanity," and "We are one." A sign that says, "Unity," and another that screams, "Courage." The largest spans the length of an entire wall. Vincit qui patitur. I run beneath it. A red light spins in the corridor on the other side of the lobby. I jump when a voice booms from the ceiling. "General Order 4 is now in effect. Repeat, General Order 4 is now in effect. This is not a drill. You have 5 minutes to report to your designated security area. Repeat, this is not a drill. You have 5 minutes to report." Through the door at the end of the hall, up the stairs straight ahead to the next door, which is locked with a keypad. I press my back against the wall beside the pad and wait. 1001, 1002, 1003. While I'm counting, the third bomb detonates outside, a muffled pop, like someone coughing in another room. Then I hear the pop, 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 pop of small arms fire. At 1008, the door bursts open and a squad lumbers through. Right past me, not even a backward glance. Now that's too easy. I'm using up my quota of good luck way too soon. I duck through the doorway and jog down another corridor, which is disconcertingly identical to the first corridor. Same spinning red light, same high-pitched "Arr!" of the siren, same annoying Sirion dope voice. General Order 4 is now in effect. You have 3 minutes to report to your designated security area. It's like a dream from which you can't wake up. At the end of this hall is an identical door with an identical keypad. The only difference is the window right beside this door. I open up with the M16 at full stride. The glass explodes and I dive through the blasted out opening without missing a step. And defiance shall be my name. Back outside in the fresh, clean Canadian air, running across the narrow strip of land that separates the buildings. A voice springs from the dark, hollering, "Halt!" I fire in the voice's general direction. I don't even look. Then, off to my left, in the vicinity of the newly repaired armory, the fourth bomb detonates. A chopper roars right over my head, sweeping its lights back and forth, and I slam into the side of the building and press my body flat against the steel-reinforced concrete. The chopper moves off, and I move on, around the side of the building to the sliver of a path that cuts down its length, wall on one side, a 10-foot-high chain-link fence topped with razor wire on the other. There should be a padlocked gate at the far end. "So the lock. I shoot it off," I said to Ringer back in the caves. "That only works in the movies, Sullivan." "Yeah, you're right. It's good this isn't a movie, or the hectoring, self-important, annoying secondary character would definitely be dead by now." "This is not a drill. General Order 4 is now in effect. You have 2 minutes to report." "All right, already, I get it. General Order 4 is in effect." What the hell is General Order 4? Ringer never mentioned anything about general orders, 4 or otherwise. It must mean a lockdown of the base, all hands to battle stations, that kind of thing. That's what I decide. Anyway, what they do doesn't change what I have to do. I jam a grenade into the diamond-shaped hole in the chain link, right above the lock, pull the pin, then hustle back the way I came, far enough not to get killed by the shrapnel, but not far enough to escape being peppered by 1,000 tiny needles. If I hadn't turned away at the last second, my face would have been shredded. The largest piece hits right in the middle of my back, wasp sting sharp times 10. My left hand got a taste, too. I look down and see a wet glove of blood glistening in the starlight. The grenade didn't just take out the lock, it blew the entire gate from its hinges. It's halfway across the courtyard, right next to the statue of some war hero from the days when wars had heroes. You know, the good old days when we slaughtered each other for all the right reasons. I trot toward the building on the other side of the courtyard. There are 3 doors evenly spaced along the wall facing me, and out of 1, 2, or all of them, I can expect a welcoming committee, according to Ringer. I'm not disappointed. The middle door flies open right before my second grenade flies toward it, and, predictively, somebody yells, "Grenade!" They slam the door closed, with the grenade inside. The blast hurls the entire door toward my head. I dive out of the way. "This is where it gets hard," Ringer said. "There's gonna be blood." "How much blood? How much can you take?" "What are you, my sensei or something? How many fifth wavers am I going to have to kill?" As it turns out, at least 3. I count that many semi-automatic rifles lying on the other side of the missing door, but it's an educated guess. Hard to tell when the troops have been blown to pieces. I slip through the mess and sprint down the hall, leaving bloody boot prints in my wake. Red light, siren, voice. "General Order 4 is now in effect. You have 1 minute to report." Somewhere on the base, the next bomb goes off, meaning 2 things. Ringer's still at large, and she's got 1 bomb left. I'm a building away from the command center, beneath which is the bunker that houses the Wonderland room. It's also, as Ringer pointed out numerous times, a dead end. If we get trapped or cornered, there won't be any vinchiting to our patituring. Little Red Riding Hood lost her way. The clever mnemonic device I came up with to navigate this next-to-last building. I hang a left at the first juncture, then a right, then another right, then a left. Her stands for high, meaning I hit the first stairwell after lost. Of course, I could have just used the word high, but that would ruin the mnemonics. Little Red Riding Hood's lost highway? Come on. I don't see anyone, don't hear anyone except the eerie General Order 4 voice echoing down the empty halls. You have 30 seconds! And now I'm starting to get a very bad feeling about this General Order 4 business, and I'm cursing Ringer, because obviously General Order 4 must be an important piece of intel she either should have known about or chose not to mention for reasons only clear to her. As I race up the stairs, the final countdown begins. 10 seconds! 9, 8, 7, 6. Landing, one more flight, then straight ahead to the walkway that connects this building with the command center. Almost there, Cassie, you've got this. 3, 2, 1. I shove open the door. Total darkness smashes down. Chapter 82. No light. No siren. No voice so soothing it's unnerving. Total dark. Utter silence. My first thought is that Ringer must have cut the power. My next thought is how odd that would be since we never discussed cutting the power. My third thought? Same as the one on the chopper. Ringer's a plant, a double agent, working with Vosh to accomplish his nefarious scheme for total world domination. Probably a power-sharing arrangement. Very well, it's decided. You will control all territory west of the Mississippi. I dig into my pockets for the penlight. I know I grabbed one. I specifically remember checking the batteries before tucking it away. In my panic, okay, not panic, haste, I am in haste. I pull out a power bar and thumb the switch that is not there. Damn you and your damn bars, Ben Parrish. I hurl the bar into the void. I'm not disoriented. I know where I am. Straight ahead is the walkway to the command center. I can hunt for the light as I go. No biggie. Once I'm in the center, there are a couple of heavily manned checkpoints to pass, several steel doors with electronic locks to breach, 4 flights of stairs, a mile-long hallway terminating at a green door, which I won't be able to tell is green unless I can find my fucking penlight. I shuffle forward, one hand sweeping the air in front of me, the other patting, digging, fumbling, and clawing at my fatigues. Too many pockets, too many damn pockets. My breath a tornado ripping across the prairie, my heart a freight train rumbling down the tracks. Should I stop and empty all my pockets? Wouldn't I end up saving time? I keep moving, part of me marveling at the fact that something like losing a penlight could throw me. Chill, Cassie. In situations like this, darkness is your friend. Unless they've got IR, which of course they do. They've blinded me. They're sure as hell not blind. I keep moving. In haste, not panic. Halfway across the walkway now. I know I'm halfway across because I find the light and click on the damned elusive thing. The beam hits the frosted glass door straight ahead, a blurry blob of shininess. I draw my sidearm. On the other side of those doors is the first checkpoint. I know this for a fact, or a Ringer-supplied fact. It's also our rendezvous spot, basically because this is as far as I was going to get as a non-enhanced ordinary mortal. The command center is the most heavily fortified building on base, manned by elite troops and protected by state-of-the-art surveillance technology. After she set off her last diversionary IED, Ringer was hitting the center from the opposite end. Penetrating was the word she used, which made me feel all icky. And meeting me here, after Ringer did what Ringer does best, kill people. Are you killing Vosh before meeting me? I asked. If I find him first. Well, don't go out of your way, the quicker we can get to Wonderland. And she gave me a look like, don't tell me. So I responded with a look that said, I'm telling you. Nothing to do now but wait. I sidestepped to the wall, switch out the handgun for the rifle. Try not to worry about where she is, if she is, and what's taking her so long. Also, I need to pee. So when I hear you set off the fifth bomb,
fourth, I'm holding the fifth in reserve.
Reserve for what? I'm going to stuff it in his mouth and light it. She said it with no emotion. No hate or satisfaction or anticipation or anything. Sure, she says most things unemotionally, but this was one of those things where you expect a little passion to permeate. You must really hate him.
Hate isn't the answer.
I didn't ask a question.
It isn't hate, and it isn't rage, Sullivan.
Okay, then, what is the answer? Feeling like I've been manipulated into asking the question, she turned away. I wait beside the frosted glass doors. The minutes crawl. Dear God, how long could it take a superhuman WMD to overcome a few guards and foil a high-tech security system? After the furious rush to reach this spot, nothing. I'd be bored out of my mind if I wasn't already scared out of it. Where the hell is Ringer? Click. I turn off the light to save the batteries. The unfortunate byproduct of my thriftiness is that darkness returns. Click. On. Click. Off. Click. 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 Hiss. I hear the sound before I feel the water.